Good morning. Court Radio is now in session.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Call 1-800-359-1479.
And the lines are alight.
When you've got legal questions.
Do I have any legal recourse?
What are my rights in this situation?
Is that valid?
And I'm just wondering, what is the statute of limitations?
We've got the answer.
You can whip your pictures out in court and say, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Right. This is Court Radio.
Let me go get the popcorn. This sounds like fun.
And now, here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. This is Dean Weitzman, your host for 1 hour of legal questions and answers. Legal entertainment, we, my co-host, the one and only David M. Rappaport.
Good morning.
Hey, Big Dave.
Hey, Dino.
We're
Happy
ready.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you
it's
as well.
It's our first show.
Yeah, it's our first post-New Year's show.
Let me be the first to say happy birthday to Mr. Dean Weitzman.
There you go.
Just passed.
That's right. Right? I didn't. My birthday did.
I said your birthday just passed.
Right. One day you'll be able to say that.
No, we rue that day. That day will not be a good day.
Yeah.
But yes, so you had a birthday.
I did.
And I was at a birthday party last night. I'll just call out to it. Alan Busdecker.
Okay.
55.
Wow.
And
used
how
to
old?
Be the speed limit before the Republicans
he's the
got
speed,
in office.
Well, he was the speed limit.
He was.
And you?
And I?
Would you care to reveal?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, 51.
51.
Mm-hmm.
So a little under the speed limit.
As well, yes. And the way I drive, I'll always remain under the speed limit, my speed limit.
Yes.
Yes. Drive a little fast at
so
times.
I was had a birthday party celebration last night with ribs and...
There you go.
All sorts.
No
of
wonder you were a little
food.
Slow getting going.
I was
this morning.
A little slow. Yeah,
I kept smacking you. Come on. Let's go.
I got home a little late.
Ah, okay. But you're here for Court Radio,
yes.
Folks. If you're listening to Court Radio, David and I will discuss some hot button topics today. But we invite you to give us a call with your legal questions. Remember, you only get one question. One question only. If you ask that second question, we're going to have to kick you to the road. Yeah. 215-263-1003. My producer extraordinaire and engineer, I don't know what else to call you. He's the guy behind the mics. He's the guy who makes sure we have the right volume, the right everything, you know, and that you're actually on the air.
We sound good today.
Yeah, that's Kyle. There you go, Kyle. There's your New Year's, your 2013 shout out. Now go back to work and stop bothering us.
You all see, right. He has the same sounds from last year. No change in sounds. They're all the same.
Yeah. Well, he's gonna. You're gonna encourage him now. I think.
The water. Go ahead. Yeah. Do the water. There you go. I knew that one was next. Oh, right. Yeah. That one too.
Crickets. Yeah. You're in jail
cell.
Right. Yeah.
Just gavel.
Okay.
We use all of them.
Oh, Lord.
I know.
He's out of tricks now.
That's it. You're done.
His bag of tricks is over. Folks, if you're listening, 215-263-1003 gets you into Court Radio. You can also reach us online at www. And I don't need to say that anymore because Kyle says everybody in the world knows that.
The www?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's done. We're done with that. Okay. Courtradio.com. You'll find us online and also at MyPhillyLawyer.com, the home of Dean Weitzman, MyPhillyLawyer.com.
Wow.
And also, and one last, if you don't have enough websites to visit today, if you're looking for another one, RnBPhilly.com. That's right, where you can click away and you'll find Court Radio, Dean Weitzman, the whole Megillah, as they say. And if you got questions, you can ask them, and they'll be answered, just like magic. You ask, it shall be answered.
But only like the magic eight ball. Yes, maybe.
Or no.
Or I don't know. Ask later.
You remember the magic eight ball? Yes, yeah. I do. I never had one. I was always one of the girls in the neighborhood had the magic eight ball that we took and used for a little while and then gave back.
It usually broke. Now you would break it. That would be the thing to do.
The oil would leak out or something. 215-263-1003. What's going on in the world, David Rappaport?
There's a lot going on in the world. We have, I don't know, there's they're talking flu epidemic. Everyone's got the flu. Anyone in here feeling? Everyone seems pretty healthy. Yeah, everyone seems pretty good in here. But yeah, they're talking the flu is running rampant.
Yep. But a couple people died. You know, when you're very young, your immune system is worn down, you really, really have to make sure that you go get your flu shot. It's vitally important. But
I've never gotten one.
You haven't? I've gotten a random, like once in a while, I'll think, I think I'll get a flu shot this year. But I'm not very consistent. And right now, there's not many flu vaccines available.
Yeah, they're going crazy.
They're running low.
Yeah. Yeah, and everyone's trying to get it now because it's you know, running rampant.
Yeah. But
anyway, that's one thing. There's the other thing. I don't know, you know, maybe it's me. This is the news story we were given by our producer, one of the big ones, that the Inquirer and they may shut down the Daily News Inquirer. Yeah. It's like, does anyone care? I don't know. Does anyone read the paper anymore with the internet and all that? I know I don't.
Well, but you read...
I read it online.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so if the writers aren't working, you're not getting online either, I guess. The internet content will
Correct.
Be down.
Yeah, and it's a union issue, of course. And this one is a particularly... this is like seems to be the theme of what's going on in our country. The union, my understanding is the union has a contract, everything's fine, and they just want to... They just stepped in, the owners, and said, you need to now cut your, we need to cut you. We want you to come to us and give us an agreement that cuts a lot of your benefits because we need to save money. And if you don't, we're going to shut down.
It's like the Twinkie thing.
Well, it's like what the union usually does to the owners. Like, we're going to strike unless you do this. Now the owners are saying, we're going to shut down unless you...
But
you
it's, you know, I mean, something more near and dear to your heart.
The Twinkie?
Well,
the
no.
Twinkie?
No.
Mine, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know who.
You know, I wasn't suggesting anything about Twinkies,
oh.
Chris.
Christie.
I was suggesting the Flyers.
Yes.
You know, you're an advent at a what's the word I was looking for? Advent? No, not an advent.
I'm
avid.
Yeah, avid.
Yeah, skip the int.
Fan.
You're an avid fan.
Yeah.
And you know, your tickets went down the tubes this year.
Right, and now they've resolved it and they're starting next week. The end of this week.
But the art of negotiation has, it seems like it's gone by the wayside. In other words, it's like an all or nothing game these people play.
Yes.
You know, and it's there's no give and take.
Well, a lot of the play. It's interesting you say that because a lot of the players, hockey players, now that it's resolved, now have come out and said, "What a stupid thing that was," because it really was stupid. You know, they almost ruined the whole season. And who wants to really think about it? I'm not even excited about it.
But then
I don't even want it to start because
right.
whoever win, this will be the year the Flyers will win the Stanley Cup. But who cares? It's tainted.
Yes.
It's half a season. It's not even right. You know what I mean?
215-263-1003. What do you think about the unions and strikes and the way negotiations are occurring? Have we gone too far? Is it beyond? And there's some unions who have been without a contract for 10 years. They just, and now, so that's the other side of it. If you just,
right.
If you don't take a hard stand, do you just sort of go back and forth and you never accomplish anything? And then who gets the advantage of that? Is that to the advantage of the worker or is it the advantage of the owner?
Well, yeah, what I think is interesting about this, though, is the newspaper one is that the owners are asking the union to force into early bargaining and concessions before the contract's up. So it's like the opposite, like I said. But, you know, it's really the same thing. If unions have the right to do that, I'm pretty much favorable to unions. But if they have the right to bargain and strike and do all the things they do when their contract's up, then why can't the owners kind of do it before the contract's up and say, hey, look, we're having financial problems. You need to come to the table now before your contract's up because we need to make a change.
Can they do that?
That's what's happening. Well,
they can't.
They're doing it. Contract's a contract.
Yeah,
right?
Contract's a contract.
You're right. They're asking them.
They're asking.
But then they said we're going to shut down. See, well, that's their remedy is
right.
We don't have enough money to operate, so we're going to shut down. Now,
right.
Whether that's true or not, who knows?
And they call that a lockout.
Well, that was the hockey thing, a lockout.
215-263-1003. You know, a British company's taken over the Pennsylvania Lottery, according to Corbett and his guys.
And he snuck that in.
Yeah.
And when the legislature was...
He looks a little British, you know?
Bad teeth and...
Yeah, bad teeth, a little pasty white and chubby.
I don't get that. He snuck that in. What is the benefit to Pennsylvania with that?
You know, I mean, next he's going to sell the state house.
Yeah, right.
You know, to the Chinese.
Crazy. And that's crazy to me, that one.
We have a handicap guy who just came in. 215-263-1003 gets you into the studio where we're talking about unions today a little bit and how they've maybe... in some ways, in order to protect, maybe they've gone too far and stepped over the line. I'm not sure. We're going to see.
Speaking of Corbett, and one of the last stories is he just sued the NCAA on behalf of Penn State, you know, for the sanctions.
You know, what is
that about?
I'm not sure. And you know what? I had to question my own motives on this one because I'm usually in favor of people expressing themselves through civil litigation. You know, I mean, that's how I make a living. If you can't agree to pay me what my client deserves, then I sue you.
Right.
So that doesn't normally bother me. And so when I saw that story, and here's the story, folks, Tommy Corbett is suing the NCAA for he's saying that they went over the line by sanctioning Penn State too far.
And it's going to affect the state.
It'll affect the state. Right. So he's here's an opportunity where he's going to put forth the needs of Pennsylvanians, as it were, in order to get the NCAA to back down. So he sued them. My first reaction was, what are you doing? Come on, stop it already. So I had to question myself, though, because that's not normally my reaction when somebody sues somebody and defends my rights. So maybe I'm just being too harsh on him. And so I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt, David, and say that the NCAA did go too far. They really reacted like in a mad mob scene to the horrific crime committed. But it's enough already.
I don't disagree. But why is the governor... I mean, I don't buy, it's all about money, and I don't buy the usefulness of a governor of a commonwealth suing the NCAA for the state university. You know, it's just, I don't know, it seems like out of his league a little bit on what he should be doing.
Here's what left a bad taste in my mouth, I think. He was kind of in charge at the time that all of this was going on, and he has... Or at least there's an allegation that he has some culpability.
Yeah, he was on the board.
Right. And they didn't take any action. Right. And they kind of maybe they didn't know about the particulars. I will grant them that. But they kind of gave free rein to the football program so because they were making all this money. And they didn't really, they turned a blind eye to probably a lot of nastiness that was going on.
Now he's going to redeem himself, supposedly. See, that's what I think it's about, that. A little bit of, look, I'm a good guy. I'm going to go after them for... And save Penn State.
I think somebody maybe should have done it. I'm just not sure he was the right guy to do it.
Right.
He just needed to do what he's done all along since he got into office, and that's be quiet and stay in Harrisburg.
And disappear somewhere.
Yeah. 215-263-1003 gets into the studio where we're chatting about some legal issues that have cropped up this week. And we're going to move on, though, to something which is really our hot-button topic for today, David. And that is an aspect of criminal law that does not come up often but gets a lot of press. How's that? Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Especially for two guys who don't do any criminal law.
Yeah, right.
The insanity defense as a defense to an allegation of a criminal activity.
Right.
It seems like we're hearing that all the time. Now, the reason why we're talking about it in particular right now is, if we make a segue into gun control, it seems like these lunatic It's usually, you know, young white guys. I mean, that's what it's been.
The Aurora shooter is alleging or using the insanity defense.
Right.
Right? Colorado.
The Colorado guy who goes into the movie theater and shoots the place up and kills a lot of people and wounds a lot of people is claiming that he was insane at the time that he did that. Now, I don't know if it's legally difficult to prove the insanity defense, or it's just that people don't want to give somebody a free pass for their bad behavior and for their horrific behavior in this instance.
But it's not. See, that's the misconception, and we'll learn more about that. I'm not so sure it's a free pass in that it's not like they go tramping out back into society right away. You know, they're still incarcerated in a mental institution and have to go through, I would assume, you would hope, some rigorous type of activities in order to establish that they're not insane anymore if they were going to be let out. You know, just but we'll find out. I'm shooting blind on that one. I don't really know much about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems to me that most of these people, by definition, are insane. Who would go into a movie theater with a semi-automatic weapon and kill people that they don't know? I mean, isn't that just by itself an insane activity?
Yeah, I guess the definition of insanity is what is key.
Well, we're joined by Mr. Spade. Good morning, sir, and welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, Dean, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. What is it that, you do criminal defense. You're an attorney in Philadelphia who focuses his practice on criminal defense, fair enough?
That's correct.
What is it about the insanity defense that is rarely used or rarely successful?
I would say it's rarely used and rarely successful, both of those things. Let me just tell you, first of all, the insanity defense in Pennsylvania is only a defense if you're charged with murder, any of the various types of murder that we have under the Pennsylvania statutes. So that right there cuts down the applicability of it and how often it's used.
Ah, so not even attempted murder?
Well, no. Attempted murder, yes.
It could, okay.
But for instance, if you're charged with robbery, if you're charged with a drug transaction, for instance, you can't assert the insanity defense. That's
okay.
Correct.
Interesting.
So
yes.
It's limited to murder and attempted murder. And but even in those instances, why is it not something that works or is used more often?
Well, under Pennsylvania law, to assert an insanity defense, the defendant has to put on evidence that at the time of the commission of the crime, he or she was operating under either a defect of reason or disease of mind such that he or she didn't know the nature and quality of the act that he was doing. What that means is you literally are operating on a different in a different reality than everybody else. And I'll give you an example of this. The last time that I had a case in which I asserted the insanity defense, it was actually in Dauphin County, and I was representing a approximately 60-year-old African-American woman who had shot her daughter, her disabled daughter, in the head as she slept and killed her. And in that situation, we asserted the insanity defense. And the reason for that, Dean, is that when I was hired for the case, and obviously I looked at the facts, I looked at the file, so to speak, the homicide file, so to speak, and the first thing that crosses your mind in that situation is, wow, she must have been crazy, right?
Okay.
In layman's terms, why would a woman Why would a mother shoot her daughter in the head and kill her? So, you know, I did my investigation, and sure enough, about within 2 years before shooting her daughter, she had actually been 302'd, which I think is another topic of what you're talking about. She had been involuntarily committed to a hospital because she was suffering from schizophrenic delusions, paranoid delusions. So I obtained all of those medical records, and they were voluminous. And essentially what those records said was that the woman was literally seeing things. She was literally having, there are two types of delusions that you can have, auditory or visual, and she was having both. So in other words, she was hearing voices, she was seeing things. And one of the interesting thing was is that one of the things that she was seeing, for instance, I'll give you an example, was there were clear medical records that said at one point she was seeing helicopters flying through her house. And this was actually noted by a psychiatrist in medical records, and it had happened 2 years before she had done this. So right there, as a lawyer, if you want to bring it back to the statute, defective disease of mind or defective reason. Most of us do not see helicopters flying through our house. So to answer your question, you have to, the one thing that, so in other words, it has to be a murder case. And then the second thing that it has to be is you have to have some medical records. It's not, that's not a statutory requirement, right. But another to have a shot, so to speak.
Your example strikes me as something that if we're going to talk, what's a good case or good defense, and yes. That one definitely goes to the level of you have to argue that, and it's pretty clear that she probably was insane. Yes. I want to mention one to you because I live in Doylestown,
yes.
And in Doylestown Township there was this police officer who, was going through a divorce. He shacked himself up in his house and left a note outside the house because of, I guess he must have called and said he was doing this. They came in, the police, and read the note that said, I'm in here, I have military weapons, rounds of ammunition, and I'm ready to die. And so they cordoned off the area. He shot at police officers. It went on for hours and hours, and eventually they got him out.
Mm-hmm.
Attempted murder was the charge.
Mm-hmm.
And now we learn that he's... His attorney's saying he was not in his right mind,
mm-hmm.
post-traumatic stress disorder, and steroid withdrawal is what they're saying. Now, this, I'm not saying that's not a good defense, but this strikes me as one that's going to be much more difficult. I don't think he had a history of any mental illness. He's working for the police for years, and, I don't know what the basis of all this is, but there is a medical thing with steroids.
Yeah.
And this post-traumatic stress disorder, which I assume,
Yeah. Well, two things strike me about that. The first thing is he left a note, and the note sounds like he was pretty clearly
right.
Identifying what he's about to do.
That's right. Exactly.
For instance, if my client had left a note saying, I'm about to shoot my daughter in the head. And,
so that there's some thinking
going on. Yeah, because she's disabled and I don't want to take care of her anymore. That would hamper the defense, so to speak. The post-traumatic stress disorder would not be a classic mental illness that you would look at to say that a person has a defect of reason or disease of mind. What we're talking about here, literally, because to take it to the second part of the statute, you have to not be able to understand the nature and quality of act that you are committing.
Right.
So usually what you see in these situations, and I'm not saying I've seen every single one, but usually what you see is somebody who is having delusions, literally who's seeing things that aren't there or hearing things that aren't there. It's generally schizophrenia. Because schizophrenia is one of the classic mental disorders or mental illnesses where you are suffering from delusions.
What we generally hear is you can't distinguish between right and wrong. You don't know what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
You just think,
Instead of thinking that you're strangling David, I'm thinking that
I'm a monster.
No, I'm squeezing a lemon.
Yeah.
I'm making lemonade instead of, and so I don't even realize the act that I'm performing.
Well, that's an interesting thing, and you guys have hit right on it, actually, because the insanity defense in Anglo-American law actually dates back to 1843. And Dean, you may remember this from your crim law class in law school a long time ago. But it's the rule is called the McNaughton rule. And what that stemmed from was a case in 1843 in England where a gentleman by the name of Robert McNaughton was trying to he wanted to assassinate the Prime Minister of England, who at that time was Sir Robert Peel. He was so mentally disabled or mentally ill and apparently suffering from delusions that he shot Peel's secretary, thinking that was Peel. The secretary was a man.
Mm.
And so he shot the secretary thinking that was the Prime Minister. And actually that point in 1843, they asserted
the first one, I guess, right?
The first one in Anglo-American law. It actually dates back to, if you want to believe it, even before that. But he was actually acquitted in that case, and there was an uproar. And then in America, if you want to take it back to the sort of seminal event in the last 50 years was when Hinckley tried to assassinate President Reagan,
right.
Asserted a successful defense, insanity defense, and caused such an uproar that many states, including Pennsylvania, immediately within the next year changed their insanity statutes. And now in Pennsylvania, you have two categories. There's legally insane, there could be two possible verdicts in an insanity case if you assert an insanity defense. The first one would be guilty but mentally ill. The second one would be not guilty by reason of insanity.
And
the reason,
they actually raised the bar.
What's the difference? Yeah.
I mean, yes. So they did away with just like ordinary crazy. Now you really, really, really have to be insane.
To be acquitted. Right. What happens to if you're found guilty but mentally ill?
Yes.
How do you get? What is the punishment, so to speak?
The interesting thing is that the punishment is very similar to the punishment if you're found not guilty by reason of insanity.
Okay.
In both situations, you do not pass go, you go directly to a mental hospital,
right.
and you sit there for a while. Now, if you're found not guilty by reason of insanity, you sit in that hospital, as Hinckley has, since, what was it, 1982,
yeah,
maybe?
Right.
83, I forget the
exact
year.
You're all better.
You sit there until some doctor says, hey, you're all better, we're going to send you out in society. And as you can imagine, not many doctors are going to want to write that down on a piece of paper.
Right.
Because if Hinckley goes out and then tries to kill President Obama, that doctor is going to be in deep blank.
Doo-doo,
yes. The legal term for it. If you are found not guilty but mentally ill, you do not pass go, you go directly to a mental hospital until the doctor says, okay, you're now better psychologically, go to jail.
And then you go to jail. Interesting.
Right. And when you go to jail, if you've been convicted of first degree, you go to jail for life. If you've been convicted of third degree,
same sentence that you
would
have.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I wanted to say something.
I wanted to say is that, you know, that doesn't really give you the benefit. I hate to use the word benefit, but if you were that mentally ill that you didn't know what you were doing, then why should you be considered guilty such that you need to serve a sentence once you're no longer mentally ill? And that's what the legislature tried to do.
Well, I also think there's a misconception. The public has a misconception. I think they still have it, that this is an easy way out.
Yeah.
That the defendants could just say, oh, I was insane. But it's not easy to get off of a murder charge with this defense. It just isn't.
No, believe me,
it's not.
And
it's not great even if you win, quote unquote, the case.
Here's the I guess what I pull from this is the real insanity is what goes on in Harrisburg, because these cats, they see something in the news, like Hinckley killing the president, and they're reactive. Ooh, we have to change our law so that these aren't like deep thinkers.
No,
okay,
want to incarcerate people and not do anything.
When you think of the theme from Frankenstein with the the town folks with the clubs and the torches, that's the legislature in Pennsylvania. All right, folks, we're going to take a break with that proclamation for the new year that the legislature in Harrisburg is like the townsfolk from Frankenstein. Okay, we'll be right back after these station breaks.
Your loved one is getting medical care and someone makes a tragic mistake. Now they'll need round-the-clock care or worse, and you're left alone. I'm Dean Weitzman of My Philly Lawyer. Call us at 215-227-2727. For more than 30 years, My Philly Lawyer has been holding hospitals and insurance companies accountable for medical mistakes. Call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident? With your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-511-500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weissman.
Yeah, we're back. Folks, you're listening to Court Radio, and I'm Dean Weissman, your host, joined in the studio with David Rappaport.
Hello.
Hi, Dave. And we're joined by our special guest today, a Philadelphia attorney, William Spade. William, do you have a middle name?
Raymond.
Okay. Because, you know, in the beginning, I only gave him Spade, you know, Jack Spade. Now I'm giving
That's
him...
actually my son.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Now I'm giving him his full due. William R. Spade, Philadelphia attorney who does criminal defense and has asserted the insanity defense on behalf of some clients over his career. You're picking a jury right now down in federal court for a new case where the insanity defense is not going to be used. Is that case?
It is not being used. This is the United States v. Cabani Savage. I don't know if you guys follow this stuff, but the back in 2004 when a house in North Philly was firebombed and six people, unfortunately, including four children, were killed. And the allegation is that this was done to intimidate witnesses in a federal RICO prosecution. And there are four defendants in that case. My client is not Mr. Savage. His name is Robert Merritt Jr. One of the defendants in the case actually is raising psychological issues, but these issues actually are go more to whether or not the government can seek the death penalty against him. But yes, you're correct. There is no insanity defense on the part of any of these defendants.
And as a related legal topic, we're also talking about how one goes about 302ing. As the public is used to hearing that term, 302ing a family member, for instance, who is exhibiting emotional and or psychological problems, and what we need to prove in order to make that happen, to put somebody away. It seems difficult. Like, I'm walking from my office to my garage on an everyday basis, stepping over insane people to get to my garage, to my car. That's the way it is in Philadelphia. You know, when I was a kid, there were places like Byberry and places like Pennhurst where folks that had emotional mental illness lived. Okay, they lived there. Then they decided one day, oh, we're taking away their rights and we're going to kick them all to the curb. And they all came into the concourse in under my building.
And affecting where they, you parking,
where they,
right?
Where they live, where I have to step over them to get. No, but it's not fair to them. Okay, forget it's not fair to me. It's not fair to them that they have to live in those kind of squalor conditions so that we can try to play this game where we're saying that their rights are important and we can't just put them away. I say that was a better place for them than living on the streets and committing crime.
Well, I think this is a whole related topic that our country is going to start having, I hope, more intently because of gun. This plays into gun control, Part of that issue is mental illness.
Not only do we have insane people that are sleeping in the concourse,
but we let them buy guns. Yeah, there's no checking
with unlimited bullets and these giant magazines. If you're wondering if this is how to handle somebody who has this kind of problem, or you have any legal question, give us a call at 215-263-1003. We're sitting here talking with William Spade. So, Bill. Can I call you Bill?
It's actually Will.
Will. Yeah. All right. Will. What do we have to prove to get at somebody 302'd?
Well, it varies. But essentially what it is that the person is a danger to themselves or to others and not able to take care of themselves or safeguard themselves. I have to tell you, I am not an expert in 302. It does come up quite a bit. In the criminal context, it's actually more of a civil area. But in the criminal context, it comes up when your client is found not competent to stand trial. Because, of course, before you can go to trial, you have to be found to be psychologically competent, be able to understand what's going on. But essentially, as I understand it, Dean, to 302 somebody, to involuntarily commit somebody, you have to prove that they are a danger either to themselves or to others. I do actually have a client, a very old client of mine, who is now more of a pro bono case than anything else, that I represented a long time ago. And the poor man is again a paranoid schizophrenic, and has been in and out of Norristown State Hospital and various other mental institutions for the last 5 years. And I will literally, like I said, he's sort of my project. So when he is feeling well, I take him out to lunch and we talk. And I can immediately tell when I take him out to lunch where he is, so to speak, in his
mental state.
In his mental state, correct. And there have been times when we'll be talking and he just starts going off into his deluded world.
There's cameras in the shower.
He feels like when he's deluded, I'm a CIA agent. I work for the Obama administration. I have a secret, that sort of stuff. And I will periodically get calls, probably once a year, from some hospital saying, Mr. X has asked that we call you Mr. Spade. He's been 302'd here. He went off of his medication. What happens, Dean, a lot of times is people who are schizophrenic, people who are bipolar, various other mental illnesses, as you know, are on medication. When they go off the medication, things fall apart. When they're on the medication, for instance, for a paranoid schizophrenic or any type of schizophrenic, there is a certain type of medication, and in layman's terms, it shuts the ghosts out of your mind. It makes the ghosts disappear. When you stop taking the medication, the ghosts reappear or the delusions reappear. And I would say it's actually lucky that people do try to 302 people, because you're exactly right with the availability of guns and various other things. A lot of these folks are actually a danger to other people more than themselves.
Yeah, but it seems like we're very reticent as a society to make that call and to say that they're a danger and then put them away for a length of time that we can accomplish. And as soon as what happens is, it seems to me, that you give them the medications, then all of a sudden they're quote-unquote normal after that. You send them back out onto the streets, and then they stop taking their medications. It's a very common problem that, schizophrenics, they intentionally stop taking their medications. I'm not sure. They just don't like how they feel when they're on their medications. They stop taking their medications, and then, of course, they start to become schizophrenic.
You're
again.
Not addressing the problem. You're just, it's the age-old issue in our country. You just throw some pills in someone, and then you set them out. You're not addressing the issue of maybe how we rehabilitate these people or get them into a normal society, where they're taking their medication, they have a vehicle where they can get the medication easily and take it regularly, and someone to help them and check up on them and all that kind of stuff.
I guess the question is, if you're going to have, if you want to give somebody the benefit of the doubt, do you give
the individual the benefit of the doubt, or do you give society the benefit of the doubt?
Well, I was going to say, there's an issue of individual freedom too, that that's what our society is wrestling with.
Yeah, but how about the individual freedom of the 20 kids in the Connecticut school?
Well, the issue
if that guy's not crazy, okay, he's dead. I'm not sure who is.
But where's the failure? Let's say it's a kid like the shooting you're talking about. Who knows? You hear after the fact that when people
somebody knew.
So what do they do?
His mom knew. Right. His
dad
knew.
What I'm saying.
Somebody knew. He should have been put away a long time ago.
But how do you? I guess the process is this. Obviously, I would think from what you're saying, to get someone 302, you got to prove that they're a danger to themselves or society. That would involve, I would think, invariably, you need medical evidence. So you need to force them or have them forced into a medical examination or a mental examination. I'm sure that's not an easy thing to do either. You know, they can, if they're able and they have somewhat of a mindset and they're not totally crazy, they can avoid that, run away, you know, or just act, oh, come on, mom, I'm not crazy, leave me alone.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Two things. I think that the first thing that you're hitting at is my understanding that Dean, you mentioned it, back in the day when you said a lot of these people are in institutions, and again, I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding was this goes back to the Reagan era, and the reason that they turned all of these folks loose out on the street was, of course, money.
The government was that
was back in the day when, you know, Reagan was vilifying the welfare queens and so on and so forth, and why are we spending all this money on these people that do nothing but harm society? So let's put them out on the street. And of course, the reason that we spend the money to keep them inside is because they are harming.
Let's blame it on Republicans. We love doing that. That's another thing we can blame on them.
215-263-1003. Will, you know, I don't know. First of all, how did it become Will? Don't most Williams, aren't they referred to as Bill?
I'm actually a junior, Dean, and my father is Bill. So in order to distinguish
easily between us. I thought there was a psychiatric reason, but
I'm sure there is, actually.
Yeah, but okay. Well,
that's the reason I understand my clients so well. I know what they're going through.
215-263-1003. We got Will Spade in the Court Radio studio where we're talking about, you know, the criminal mind and psychiatric issues and how they come together and whether one can really get off. And, you know, and what does it mean when you're not guilty by reason of insanity?
Here, I have a good question for you.
Yeah.
Oh, you were going to say something, so.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
We're talking about this limitation. It's for murder or attempted murder.
Yeah.
What about, is there a defense? And again, I do civil law, so I'm not, I don't know. Is there a defense if you get charged with, let's say, robbery or something? You know, every crime involves an intent. You have to have an intent to do the crime.
Correct.
So is there a defense that says, I was not in my mind at that moment to have the intent to do that crime, so I'm not guilty. But it's a lesser crime. You don't have the availability of insanity, but you're sort of saying, at that moment, I was out of my right mind.
You want to use the insanity defense.
It's
what you're trying to do.
I know. But I've heard of, isn't there an ability to say it and have the intent?
I could be wrong, but I've never heard it asserted in anything
I just thought, you know, if intent is the issue.
So when you go you go into Wawa with a handgun, you take the money, you say, give me all the money in the drawer, you take the money when you leave, and you thought really you were just at, you know, your piggy bank, and you had borrowed money from
That's my example. The person who's a schizophrenic who would who could invoke the insanity defense if they were charged with murder or attempted murder, commits a crime, a lesser crime like robbery, and exactly like Dean says, it's pretty clear from a medical standpoint that they thought they were taking money out of their piggy bank, but it was really Wawa. You know, they had that moment. They can't invoke it, right?
Speaking, David, of questions about piggy banks, let's talk to Devon in West Philly.
So my question doesn't get answered?
It will get answered. Maybe Devon will answer it. Hey, Devon, welcome to Court Radio.
How you guys doing?
All right.
Good.
Happy New Year.
And the same to you, sir. The same to you. You have a question for us. Give it up.
Yes. So is it true that it's the law that after 7 years, things have to come off your credit? And if so, do I need a lawyer to be involved in that circumstance?
Your credit. Okay.
Okay. You're there talking about his credit history.
Right.
He didn't pay the car payment, and it's been 7 years, and it's still following him around. Is it come off? Well, first off, I'm not sure it's a law, but I think it's certainly a practice that it's not seven now. No, they've increased like everything ten. Else in the yeah. world. They've uh-huh. made it worse for us. It's now 10 years. Ten years. And will it come off automatically? No, I don't think so. Well, it may. But again, what happens is, as a practical matter, every year that let's say you turn a leaf, and instead of being a deadbeat, and I'm not suggesting, Devon, you were at some point a deadbeat, but at some point you turn a leaf and you're now going to be responsible and you pay all your bills on time, but you were a deadbeat. Every year that you're responsible, your credit improves. The numbers start to come up, and it's not an all or nothing thing. And so if it's been 7 years since you were a deadbeat, and you've been responsible for the last 7 years, that bad credit's not really going to have the same effect it had on you 7 years ago. And it's going to have even less effect next year and the year after. But after 10 years, it shouldn't be there at all. The credit companies that follow your credit, they kick it loose after 10 years.
And do they sell it to another person so it can pick up again for 10 years?
No. Now you're talking about something else. You're talking about actually collecting the debt. And the answer to that is there's a statute of limitations like anything else. And if you've owed somebody money for more than 4 years in Pennsylvania, then the statute of limitations would kick in and you would never have to pay that back.
Okay.
All right, Devon. Thanks for calling Court Radio.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Unless they got a judgment, and then, you know, they kept the judgment going, as we've always said.
Yes.
You know.
The dreaded judgment.
215-263-1003.
We're talking to Will Spade, defense attorney in Philadelphia, who represents crazy people sometimes and has to raise the insanity defense in an attempt to get them off. Is that true? Get them off.
That's get them off what?
That's what people think.
Get them off incarceration. Yeah,
no, they don't go jail. They don't go to Graitorsford. They go to Norristown State Hospital for the criminally insane.
Correct. It's really not raised that often, Dean. In my career, I've raised it three times. Now, like I said, for me to raise it, I look at for instance. If somebody comes to me...
Has it ever been successful?
It's been successful one time. The woman that I was telling you about out in Dauphin County, it depends how you define success. The woman in Dauphin County, actually, in my opinion, it was not successful. She was found guilty but mentally ill. So some lawyers consider guilty but mentally ill a success. But,
it's a hollow victory.
For everybody. In that situation, that was the clearest case I have ever seen of somebody who was actually, mentally ill, insane. And I think from talking to the jurors after the case, what they were saying, and you guys have touched on it, is she killed her daughter. She's got to be held responsible for that. She has to. And it's not just responsible. She has to go to prison. A lot of jurors actually feel... an ethical duty for there to be a verdict on the sheet saying, yes, you did this and you're responsible for it.
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
That's
with the
difficult part with jury. Yeah. I mean, look, it is. Humans. Right, we're humans.
215-263-1003. Should we start putting mentally insane people back in institutions regularly? You know, I mean, let's just start moving them out of the 2 Penn Center concourse and into...
He's really working on his parking situation.
And into institutions. I mean, and is that something that, like, Mike Nutter can do? Can Michael Nutter start putting people into mental institutions and getting them off the streets of Philadelphia?
Well, let me weigh in as another person who has an office in Center City and also just... I consider myself to be a fairly good person, but I too walk through Center City, especially in the wintertime is when you feel the worst and you're passing all of these poor souls laying, literally laying on the sidewalk. Some of these guys are laying over a grate And I always think, why is the city not rounding these folks up and getting them into a heated place where they can have a meal and so on and
we
so
had
forth.
A guest, remember, Dean, we had that whole issue of the feeding. We talked about that one show about feeding the lines where these usually religious organizations do feedings, and that's not helpful. That's saying you're out on the street, we're going to give you a meal, so come here and get your meal and then stay out on the street. That's not doing anything to help these people.
But it also doesn't address it, again, in the winter time, right. they're cold. I mean, they've got to be incredibly cold. But, you know, it is a difficult thing. And let me give you another anecdote from another Center City anecdote. When I was I used to be a prosecutor in the district attorney's office under Lynn Abraham. And me and this other prosecutor used to go to the Dunkin'.
Talk about insanity. Wait a minute. Will, I don't know what happened to you there. You're a prosecutor under Lynn Abraham?
Saw the light at some point.
That's a reason for incarceration in and of itself.
That's a whole nother story.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, we used to go to the Dunkin' Donuts in that concourse, probably right under your building. Actually,
yes.
You got a caller.
Right.
No. Go ahead.
Okay. So there was a Dunkin' Donut run by an Indian family, uh-huh. And so we walk up and we order our coffee, and there's this, you know, and I'm saying there was a homeless person. We used to call them bums, or my kids actually call them bums. There was a homeless person, and he's standing there, and he's like begging for change and everything. And so we're all, of course, taught you never give them money, right? You offer to buy them a donut, or you know. So I, you know, being the trying to be a good citizen, I say, here, pal, I'm not going to give you a buck, but I'll buy you a juice. And the Indian woman behind the counter was waving her arms at me. No, do not do this. And I'm thinking, you heartless woman, I'm going to buy him something. So I buy him the juice. He opens up the juice, takes a sip of it, spits it all over me, and then pours the juice down on the ground. And my friend who was with me was cracking up because, of course, she knew that what the Indian woman knew, that this guy, you know, wanted whatever liquor, whatever it was. So that's really the problem that you face with a lot of these folks, is that they don't want to be here.
Yeah,
they can't accept the help.
Well, there's another issue. We can't assume that all of them are mentally ill. A lot of them are drug addicts who are just looking. That might be a mental illness as
yes,
well.
Yes, it is.
We've addressed that, but they're, you bring up the point. They're looking for money so they can go buy something. They're not looking for food and shelter. That's not the only issue. It's a whole rehabilitation issue. We've talked about this so many times, you know, not addressing the problem, just sort of putting the Band-Aid over it.
All right, let's talk to Linda from Willingboro, New Jersey, who has a mental health issue or question or comment. Sorry, Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. What's up? How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, but I have such an issue with the mental health.
Yes.
I work in mental health. I've been in mental health for many, many years. In fact, I have my degree in behavioral health, and I've been doing this for many years. And it's so sad that all these institutions have been closed down because, I work in, they're branched out. Some of them are in group homes, okay? And I work in, the group home with them, and I'm telling you right now that medication keeps them calm. Also, it may make them feel bad, but it keeps them calm. It may make them feel like a little like olive or whatever, but they need it. And also, when they're in the group home setting, they have 24-hour care where counselors make sure they get their medications.
Right.
And if they refuse to take their medications, they can't stay in the group home. That's one of the rules.
Yeah,
right.
I actually worked in a group home back when I was in college. That's how I made my money to go to Temple. And so back in the late 70s and early 80s, I was taking care of these folks. And, they had some mental retardation issues, but they also had mental health issues. They were angry.
Right.
They were violent. They could be violent
without
getting the right medication.
Yes.
And you know, so we keep talking about this, and people keep getting hurt by folks who have mental health issues.
Exactly.
When is enough enough? I think we should take money from the gun companies. for like 10% of all the money they make from selling these vicious, violent
yes.
contraptions and open up mental health hospitals. And
I totally agree. Something has to happen.
Linda, if I could run the country, Linda, problems would be solved like that.
Yeah,
I'll say the same thing, and I will be right beside you too.
All right. Well, you'll be the president, and I'll be the vice president.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll be Biden. All right, Linda, take care. Thanks for calling Court Radio.
Okay, I love your show.
I love you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
She didn't love you. She loved the show.
Oh, I'm sorry. 215-263-1003. You could be lucky like Linda and get a talk to David Nye and Will Spade, not Bill. Don't make the mistake. He still has problems with his father. Yeah. I mean, this poor guy.
I have issues.
He has issues. But you could have him representing you, too. I mean, just think about it. And he worked for Lynn Abraham. I mean, think about how lucky you could be. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Kim from Upper Darby. Hello, Kim. And welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. What's your question, Kim?
Well, I have...
Or you have a comment, questions? What do you want?
Well, no, I have a question.
Go for it.
I wanted to know, is there... And once they place the judgment on your door...
Say that again, because your little cell phone broke up.
I'm sorry. Is there a way to stop a judgment or to prolong it once they place the judgment on your door?
Okay, so now when you say a judgment is placed on your door, you mean that there's already been a court hearing, and you've already been found you have lost the court hearing, and they got a money judgment, and now they've tacked it up on your door and said, hey, we got a judgment against you.
Yes, it'll be done actually tomorrow.
Did you participate in the court hearing?
No, I went to work.
Okay,
so I can make money.
So you didn't go. All right. All
right. Has it been more than 30 days since the court hearing?
The court hearing was done on the 4th of December.
Then the answer would be yes, Dean. It is. Okay. So probably the period for appeal has run, and so now they've got a judgment. They're going to have to collect the judgment. Is this a judgment for eviction?
Yes.
It's a landlord-tenant. Okay, that's what I thought.
Okay,
yeah.
And so the question is, how long before I'm going to have to be out of here? But they're going to have to go back. Usually, they're going to have to go back one more time to...
Ejectment.
To get the sheriff to get an order for the sheriff to actually remove you from the premises. If that hasn't happened yet, you probably have a little bit more time.
But, 30 days.
Yeah, maybe another 30 days or so. But the point is that you want to do this in an orderly fashion. And so it's best if you get somebody to call on your behalf and arrange for you to leave and surrender the premises at a time when it's convenient for you. But I would say at this point, if the premises are going to be posted tomorrow, you don't have more than another thereabouts 30 days. But, you know, you could file. There's still time for filing certain appellate rights if you wanted to. But you would need to hire an attorney. And it's going to cost you money, big money, a lot of money. Maybe more money than it's worth doing, but you know it isn't like you couldn't file because there are still some legal avenues available to you if you wanted to prolong this even more.
Yes, I called the courts and they said that the landlord would actually have to call to like stop it.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, okay. Obviously, but like I was saying, you have some time. You don't have a lot of time.
I can tell you how it would stop. If the issue obviously is money and you owe rent, giving the money would probably make the landlord amenable to stopping anything from happening.
And that is my intention.
Okay, well, then you should do that as quickly as possible.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Take care, dear. Thanks for calling Court Radio. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Maurice from Norristown. Hello, Maurice, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's happening?
Well, I pretty much have a question for Mr. Spade.
Yes, that's Will Spade.
Mr. Will Spade.
Go ahead.
Thank God I was listening to your show this morning because I'm in a predicament.
Okay.
All right.
We have very little time, so get the predicament out.
Okay. I was arbitrarily classified as mentally ill and sent to Norristown State Hospital by my own attorney. My own attorney wrote the petition to have me committed, and he lied on the petition. And I've been sent here. I've been here almost 2 months now, And I've sued the lawyer and the judge trying to get an injunction to have me, you know, taken back from this place. I came from jail here.
Okay.
Is it a criminal lawyer that did this? A criminal defense lawyer?
A court-appointed attorney did this.
Okay.
And they're trying to get me to plead guilty to kidnapping for ransom, 4 counts of kidnapping for ransom, and they're using this as sort of like a punishment to get me to do this. And I don't know what else to do. I've filed a complaint in the United States District Court. The complaint was dismissed. I'm appealing it right now to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm waiting on an order as we speak.
Okay, so here's the question. The question is whether, this raises the flip side, and that is, can people be incarcerated in mental health hospitals unjustly, unfairly, and get caught up in the system, and you have, let's say this caller is a completely normal guy. He was working, and there was no problems, and he was pulled into the system unfairly and locked up and left to go. And that really is, unfortunately, we don't have time to answer that question.
Well, how do you get out is really the question.
But the question is, once you're in, can you extricate yourself? And again, I go back to, maybe some people are going to be put away that shouldn't be put away. I'm willing to take that chance. I'm willing to take that chance because I think it's important that the vast majority of us are protected from people who have mental health issues, right. And far too many of them are on the street and in the concourse for my liking and for all of our, for the people who have to live in society.
You take his number, though, and maybe have someone call him just to find out.
Yeah. We'll get his
Stay
number.
Stay on hold.
And we'll get his number and we'll give him a call back. Thanks for giving us a call and have a great Sunday. Folks, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to thank Will Spade for coming in. You got to see this, guys. He's on crutches. He crawled into Court Radio. We want to thank you, Will, for coming in and for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Dean.
All right. Folks, if you're listening to Court Radio, you'll be listening momentarily to E. Stephen Collins and Philly Speaks coming up right after these breaks.
Your child broke a window, but you taught them to be responsible for their mistakes. They do the right thing. Doing the right thing isn't what insurance companies do best. I'm Dean Weitzman of My Philly Lawyer. Call us at 215-227-2727. Doing the right thing means more than saying I'm sorry. It means paying for the injuries your mistake has caused by making insurance companies pay. Call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.